So in this text called Bhakti Sudha or Nectar of Devotion, we have studied about the difference between love for the world and love for God. Love for the world or for an individual is limited to that individual, limited to a particular cause, limited to a particular goal or an object. But love for God makes us think universal, because He is everything. Everything is an expression of that divinity. And so it makes us love and adore everybody, everything. And that is the difference between worldly love and spiritual love. And last week we had studied that when you remember God, you get not only the joy of worldly peace and happiness, but you get liberation from this cycle of birth and death. You go beyond this world, beyond even all the sorrows of this world. And we had studied that even people who hate God, but remember there are instances in history where people hated God, or when God appeared on earth in a human form, there were some people who hated Him and fought with Him. And there are others who just deny Him and constantly criticize, but they say that even they, he gives them liberation, which you would think is very strange, that if somebody can hate God, how can he get liberation? They say that, I think they talked last week, because God's nature is sweetness. Like if say there is a lump of sugar here, and I say I hate sugar, or I love sugar, but if I put that sugar in my mouth, whether I hate it or love it, it's going to give me its nature of sweetness. So similarly, the Lord's name and the Lord's qualities are all love, compassion, sweetness. So anyone who remembers Him, even it may not be a very educated person, may not be a very sophisticated person, may not be very smart, maybe even an enemy of God, but He grants them liberation, grants them eternal peace, because He says, at least they remembered me. You say, well, then, you know, then let us from tomorrow just start, you know, hating God. At least we'll get the, you know, the divine pleasure and the liberation. But what about those who remember God with love? You know, because this book talks about that divine love or love for God. So what about, is there any benefit? You know, if they also get liberation and get peace, and then what is the difference? What special does He do for His devotees who love Him? So we'll talk about that today, that what is the difference between remembering God just, or maybe some people remember God with desire, you know. So what is the difference between remembering Him with love and in other forms of remembrance of the God? So verse number 13 on page 23. Kim punar bhakti samyukta. Jana devam bhajantiha tesham prema vashad devah. Swayam bhavati sevakah. He says, Kim Punar, so we talked about, even if you remember God with anger or lust or desire, He blesses you. But how about people who remember God with love? So, Kim Punar Bhakti Samyukta Jana. So, Jana means this people who remember God with bhakti, with love, Samyukta, where mind is totally filled with love for God. And they, Devam, these people worship God, Deva, as bhajanti. Bhajanti means they worship Him, they remember Him, and they serve Him. It's not only enough to remember God, but one has to become a servant of God and work for Him in this world. So one who does that, what happens to them? He says, tesham, for these people, prema vashat devaha, the Lord Himself, out of love, prema vashat, swayam bhavati sevakaha, swayam, He Himself becomes a servant. So God becomes a servant of people who remember Him with love. So that is what He does extra. So if you remember God just in a routine way, that's good. But if you remember him with love, then he becomes your servant. You don't have to then no longer be a servant of God, but he comes and takes care of all your needs. It's kind of an interesting verse. So before we proceed, I thought I would summarize the four kinds of devotees, four kinds of people who approach God. We have covered that in the past, but it's useful to kind of revise it. It's covered in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says that there are four kinds of people who come to me, who maybe go to the church or temple or mosque or who pray to God. So there are four kinds. One is the suffering. I'm suffering. I'm sick, O Lord. I have, you know, this disease, or my child is sick, or my mother is not doing well. So Lord, please heal them. So that is the first kind. The second kind is desirous, you know, oh Lord, my son, you know, he's been searching for a job for so many years, so many months, he can't find a job, or my husband got laid off, you know, we don't have any money, so please, you know, give him a job or give us some money. Or a person says, God, you know, things are tough these days, I only have 1 million. And my neighbor, you know, he has 2 million and he has a bigger car and he shows off, you know, he has this new BMW hybrid. God, please give me 3 million so I can get a bigger car. So these people go to God with a desire. You know, I want something. So they come there asking for something. The third group are the intellectuals who say, I want to see what's written in the Upanishads, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita. I want to study Sanskrit. Or I want to know what are the Bible, ancient Bible scrolls, you know, what do they cover and how do they deal with the subject of theology of Christianity. And so they approach religion as a PhD thesis, you know, and then they want to become a professor of theology, a professor of, you know, religious studies, and, you know, they teach in the various universities. So there are three kinds who approach God. And then the fourth kind, the wise person, Jnani, that's who is called in the Gita, he says he does not want any of those. He does not want relief of suffering. He says if there is suffering, that's okay. It came from my karmas. He has no selfish desire. He does not go there, give me this, give me that. He does not go with a shopping list to the church. Oh God, you know, I have this, but now I want this. Not like that. And neither his pursuit is just intellectual. He does not want to become a PhD or a professor. He wants God for his own sake. He says, I want God, I want you. I do not want you to get anything else. If you use God to get one of these things, that means God became the instrument and this thing became more important. If I have an instrument, like if I use a knife to cut an apple, so the knife is an instrument, but the apple is my goal. I want to eat the apple. So if you're using God to relieve suffering or desire or intellectual, then you're making God an instrument and you're making this goal higher. He says, I don't care for any of these. I want you, you and you alone. It's like, you know, marriage. You know, a person loves a girl and he wants to marry her. One says, you know, her father, he's very rich and he has, you know, so many houses, and I'm sure he'll give her at least one house, you know, after we get married. Another person says, I love you no matter what, you know, whether I. So whose love is higher? One who is, you know, loving for a particular purpose, or one who is loving, you know, with a desire? So similarly, the Lord says that one who approaches me wanting me, for me, that person is the one I love them. I love them all. You know, they have come to me and I will bless them. Whoever goes to God with whatever desire, if the desire is pure, if the desire is strong enough, the Lord will bless you. But the one who wants me and me alone and does not want me for getting something is the one that is dearest to me. So for such a person who remembers God with love, God becomes his servant. What? God becomes his servant. I thought such a person should serve God. You know, we always say true devotee of God does God's work with humility, with love, without any arrogance, and says, you know, I'm a humble servant of the Lord and I'm serving the world as an agent of the Lord. If you look at the lives of all great saints, all great prophets, they all were very humble, whether you look at the life of Jesus or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda or Guru Nanak or Narsi Mehta, all these great saints, Saint Francis, they all worked to serve the world as agents of the Lord. They had no humility, they had no arrogance, they had no pride, even though a lot of them were great realized masters. But their whole mission in life was to serve. But here the verse says God himself becomes the servant. How can that be? So in our scriptures, there are a lot of beautiful examples of how this happened. There is the story of Krishna and Arjuna. It is said God appeared on earth in two forms in our scriptures, one as Rama and one as Krishna. And so when he appeared as Krishna, here of course Krishna is God and this is Arjuna is the student, which is the Bhagavad Gita. But actually in this episode, Arjuna was the owner of the chariot and he had asked God to become his charioteer. Because God was his friend, Krishna was his friend, because they were childhood buddies. And he said, what help do you need? He was going to fight a great battle. And he said, oh Krishna, oh Lord, I want you to drive my chariot. So God himself became his driver, became his chariot driver, and took him through the whole battle safely, just because out of love, because they were friends, and Arjuna loved the Lord, loved Krishna. And he said, you know, if you want me to do that, and as you know, a charioteer in the battle gets exposed to all the, you know, the arrows and the bullets and all the missiles and everything. But the Lord said, you know, if that's what you want, I will do it. So out of love, he even became a driver, even became a chauffeur. There is another very beautiful story. You know, as we know, Ram was another manifestation of God. And Ram had appeared on earth a few thousand years before Christ, about 5,000 to 7,000 years before Christ. And he was a king. Ram, the Lord himself, was born in a palace. And then he was a king. And his younger brother, Lakshman, was also a divine, very divine soul. One of the gods had taken that form. So they were both manifestations of divinity, and since they were kings, they always carried a bow and arrow, and that was a symbol of, you know, of being of royalty, of being a warrior. And so there is a very interesting story. This Tulsidas, this is about 500 years ago, he was a great saint, and he wrote a very beautiful epic. It's called Ramcharitmanas, which is a very beautiful story of Ram as he appeared 5,000 to 7,000 years ago, and how he lived. And not only it is a story of the Lord's, you know, stories about the Lord on earth, but also talks about a lot of philosophy, a lot of good teachings, a lot of wonderful messages. Because Lord Ram, as he traveled through his life in different parts, he gave advice to people and he helped people, and there were other saints that he met. And so there is a constant teaching also in that beautiful text, which runs into several thousand verses. So he wrote this beautiful text and the people were so delighted, because originally the story of Ram was written in Sanskrit and was not easy for people to understand. So he wrote it in the simple language that was of that time, so people could understand it. And so this beautiful story, people were so pleased that the king of that country said, you know, Tulsidas ji, you're a great saint. And he went to visit him, and he was living in this humble hut, very poor. He was extremely poor. He had literally no money, but he all the time sang the Lord's glory and spoke about his, you know, his exploits and how much he loved God and how his teachings were meant to enlighten everybody. So the king felt sorry for this poor saint. You know, he said, look, his hut is broken. There's not even a good roof on it. And it rains and his whole house gets wet. He said, okay, I'll give you this bag of jewels, gold, and all his jewelry and a lot of gold and valuable, and a big bag full of gold. And that was worth, you know, in those days, probably millions of, you know, rupees. And I mean, no, people had, nobody had ever seen that kind of wealth. And so he gave it to Tulsi Das Ji, and Tulsi Das Ji just kept it in the hut. And now, you know, with this kind of money, you have to hire security guards and, you know, because that much money just lying, he didn't. He just left there and he went to sleep. And it so happened that there were two robbers who had seen this whole episode, the king giving this. And they said, look at this fool. You know, there is so much money lying in a bag and he has just kept it without any security, without, you know, he should have got Teltech or ADT or somebody, you know, immediately. Nothing was guarding his house. And so they said, at night, in the middle of the night, we're going to go rob his hut. You know, he'll be sleeping and he's helpless anyway. Even if he tries to resist us, we can beat him up and steal that gold because that's worth a lot of money. So quietly at night, in the middle of the night, they go there intending to steal. And this is a true story. That when they reached the hut, they found two young men standing there with carrying bows and arrows. It was Ram and Lakshman, God and his brother himself, were standing in front of the hut, guarding the hut. And they were shocked. They said, who are these two people? We didn't know that. So they said, I don't know. So they went around, and you know, after a while they came back. After a few hours, they thought, you know, the guards will be, and these two were still standing, guarding the hut. And so they ran away and they were so scared. And then they realized that these two people are God himself and his brother. And so next morning when Tulsi Das Ji woke up, of course, the two of them had disappeared. You know, they were no longer there. And the neighbor said, who were these two guards you had? You know, we saw somebody in the middle of the night. He said, I didn't keep any guards. What are you talking about? And then the two thieves come and they fall down at his feet. They say, we are so sorry. We are so sorry. He said, what are you sorry about? He said, you know, we came to rob the gold and there were two young men standing with bows and arrows, you know, guarding your house all night. And we came two or three times thinking maybe they were there for a while or they would go to sleep. And Tulsi Das Ji started crying. Tears came to his eyes. He said, what a miserable wretch I am that because of my gold, my beloved God had to stand outside my house all day, all night and guard it. And his brother, he started crying. Tears were flowing down. He said, I'm so sorry. He immediately took that gold and just distributed it among the poor. He said, I do not want money where my beloved Lord has to stand outside my house to guard my house. I mean, that is the kind of love that a devotee has for God and that God has for his devotee, that he'll do anything to protect his devotee. That's what even in the Gita he says, that one who remembers me, who surrenders to me, then I take responsibility for his welfare. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Whatever that my devotee needs, I provide. So people say, you know what, if I take upon the spiritual path, who'll take care of my family? Who'll take care? The Lord says, if you are working for me, then it becomes my responsibility. I take care of my devotee. So who is greater? The devotee is greater or the Lord is greater? In this particular verse, the teacher tells us that even though the devotee does not worship the Lord for getting anything from him or becoming superior, but because he is constantly serving the Lord, he's constantly doing the Lord's work, the Lord feels so indebted, feels so grateful, feels so thankful to the devotee that he says, okay, from now on, I am your servant. You are the master. Whatever you tell me, I will do. As we heard in the story of Arjuna, he asked him to be a driver. He said, I'll do that. And whatever the devotee's wish is, the Lord takes it upon himself, his responsibility to fulfill it. So they say that a devotee of the Lord is even greater than the Lord because the Lord is ever willing to serve his devotees. Even though the devotee doesn't think so, he does not think that I am great or I am superior because he has. But the Lord has so much love and compassion for us that when we turn towards him and work for him and become his servants, then he in turn becomes our servant. So who is whose servant? You can't figure that out. But the fact is that love for God is the most fulfilling thing that we can. And it is said that the Lord resides in the hearts of all. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddesher Junatishthati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudhani Mayaya. He says the Lord is in the hearts of all, resides in the heart of all, and just as an engine propels, like in the car, there is an engine which drives the car, or in the fan, there is a motor which moves the. So he says, Lord is the motor, he is the engine within us that propels us and that makes us work, makes us do. Like I am talking at this moment or you are listening, it is the Lord that is doing that. But if he is in the heart of all, is he in the heart of evil people also? Is he in the heart of criminals and corrupt people and mass murderers and child molesters and rapists? Yes, he is in the heart. That's why they are able to function. Even a child molester is able to molest a child because the Lord is functioning through him. His energy to do good or bad comes from the Lord himself. So the Lord is the one that gives us the ability to function, to think, to walk, to talk. So whether I am a criminal or whether I am a saint, it will depend on my vasanas, on my tendencies. But the power to perform good or bad actions comes from that same divine source. It is the same source that, you know, gave Hitler the ability to, you know, kill 6 million Jews. It is the same source that gave Christ the ability to preach, you know, the Sermon of the Mount. So the energy or the power is the same, but it is how you use the energy that determines whether you are a good or a bad person. But they say, how does God feel? How does he feel if he's sitting in the heart of a saint or if he's sitting in the heart of a criminal? Does he feel the same? So the teacher says, no. In the heart of a saint or a heart of a good people, good person, he's very happy. He says, oh, it's such a beautiful place for me to live. And I can serve this person. I can help this person. His mind is full of beautiful thoughts. It's like he's in a garden of beautiful thoughts. The Lord loves that. He says, how about in the heart of a criminal? He says, I don't like to stay here. I can't, because there is so much noise and so much disturbance and so much anger and so much agitation. But what can I do? I'm all pervading. The Lord is everywhere. So he can't escape. There is no place where he's not. That's what they say. He's all pervading. Sarva vyapi. Everywhere the Lord is. He's in the criminal. He's in the saint. But in the criminal, he stays. But he's very unhappy. He's very miserable. He said, I wish I could get out and I wish I could run away. But unfortunately, he can't. So that's what they say, that the essence of this verse today is that if you want to remember the Lord, remember him with love. And even if there are sorrows that come in your life, you know, there is nobody to blame but I myself, because it is my own karmas, it is my own actions that caused. So constant remembrance with love is better. You can even, some people just mechanically, you know, they chant the rosary and just keep chanting his name. And people, you know, mechanically do that, and just, which is okay too. Remembering him is good. It's like sugar, you know, whether you mechanically eat it or you eat it with love, it will give you sweetness. But in the Lord's case, when you remember him with love, then he becomes your servant, and he then is available to do whatever you need. Not that you need it. You see, people, a true devotee of the Lord, as we said, does not want anything from God. But God says, doesn't matter. Even if you don't want, I am here to serve you. So it's a very, very beautiful verse. I hope there are some questions, comments. Yeah, no. He would fit in the desirous category. And there's nothing wrong with asking God for a job. I'm not saying that. Or if you're sick or if your child is sick, praying to the Lord, it's not wrong. I'm not saying that is not wrong. But that is still with a motive. So such people, when the child is sick, they will go to the church. But when the child is well, then they forget God. Then they never go again. So the point is that There's one great saint who said that people remember God when they have sorrows. They don't remember God when they are happy. But if you remember God when you are happy, you will not get sorrows. So the point is that, yes, if your child is sick or you need a job and you go talk to God, there's nothing wrong with that. But it should not end there. Once I get the job, okay, God, thank you, I got the job, then I never go back. The point is that one should constantly remember whether you need something or not. So don't make God an ATM. But yeah, no, there's nothing wrong. You know, if you need a job and, you know, you go to church to pray, that's good. But I should not only go when I need something. I should remember God constantly, even when I don't need anything. In fact, that's the time to remember Him. That's more important. When I don't need anything, when everything is going fine and I still remember Him with love, that's even more superior. Yes, be grateful for what you have. Absolutely, yeah. If everything is going fine, then remember Him with gratitude, yes. Yeah, grateful one should be constantly, even for the human birth. You know, we could have been born as a cockroach or been born as a rat or a mosquito, you know. So at least I'm a human, so be thankful for that. I have the human intelligence and the abilities and all that. So yeah. No, gratitude is a very, very, very powerful emotion. And when you fill your heart with gratitude, it creates a lot of positive feelings. So yes, gratitude is a very beautiful emotion, yes. Thank you, yeah, that's good. Does that answer your question? Right. Definitely, yeah. You can start with going with a particular motive, and then once you get it, then you realize how compassionate, kind, and loving God is, and it can transfer into that, yeah. But a lot of people just limit it to that. While when I'm suffering, I go, and then once my suffering is ended, then I don't need it, yeah. Like that story about the parking spot, I think it's a very nice story I can tell people. I don't know if people haven't heard it. It's beautiful. So there was this man who was going for a job interview, and it was a very important job, and if he didn't make it in time for the interview, he would lose his job. And he was in Manhattan, and looking for parking, he couldn't find it. Even the parking lots were full. And there was nothing available on the street. The nearest lot was full, and he was driving and driving, and it was getting closer and closer to his interview time. And he said, if I don't make it, you know, this is a very important job, and, you know, I've had a great difficulty finding this job. So he says, oh Lord, you know what? If I find a parking space, I promise you I'll stop smoking, I'll stop drinking, I'll stop doing all the other bad things I do, and I'll start going to church every Sunday. I'll stop smoking, drinking, doing all my bad things, and start going to church every Sunday. And as he said that, miraculously a space opened up near him. He says, oh, never mind God, I found it. So we quickly forget. So I don't have to do all those things. True. No, but I think once you remember God, then everything automatically comes. You automatically get relief from suffering. Your desires get fulfilled. Your knowledge comes. But you don't go for that. And that's what we'll talk about next week, that what are the benefits of devotion? What are the results? That's what we'll talk about next week, that what is the benefit of that? Whatever you want, you get, even though you don't desire it. He does not desire that. He does not go for that. But the devotion, the love for God automatically gives him, even if there is suffering in his life, he says, oh Lord, that's okay, it's my karmas. So he has total surrender and total love, like just as Jesus, even when he was being crucified, he still did not lose his love and his faith for God. So that is the height of, you know, devotion and love. And that's what the wise person shows us in his or her life. Karmas can be, right. Yeah, there was a great saint like that who used to talk to Mother Goddess, you know, he was a devotee, and he used to talk to her, and she would come to him every day, and he would talk to her, and somebody asked him, do you see God? He said, I see God more clearly than I see you. That's how close he was to God, and he had a terminal cancer of the throat, where he couldn't even speak, his saliva was dripping, he was in severe pain. That was his last days before he was dying. And somebody told him, you talk to the Mother Goddess every day, why don't you ask her to relieve you of your cancer? He says, first of all, She is the mother of the whole universe, the Lord. And I should ask her for a trivial thing like relief from cancer, that this body is not me. See, he had lost that body identification. He said, this body is going to perish anyway. Whether it dies from cancer or heart attack or stroke, how does it matter? One day I have to drop it. I might, you know, die in a car accident. But the cancer I have got because of my past karmas, either in this life or my previous life, I must have done something which caused me to get this cancer. Now, if I ask the Mother Goddess to relieve me of this cancer, she'll do it. I know that because that's how close he was. But he said, but my karma will still be there. So I'll have to undergo some other suffering because she's not going to be able to wipe out my karmas. My good and bad karmas that I have done in multiple lifetimes will still come in. So I have to then some other way pay back. So this cancer is a result of my karma. Let it be. I have to drop this body anyway. So if it's meant to go with cancer, so what? Could be a car accident, could be a stroke, could be a heart attack, could be anything, could be an infection. So for a wise person, I think at our level, if it's okay, if you want to ask God for relief of suffering and some desire you have, it's better asking God than ask somebody else. You know, it's better to go to him, and it's okay, because at least in that way you are remembering God. Like we said, remembering God is like eating sugar. It's always sweet, no matter how you eat it. So remembering God is always good, but one should not only remember God when you are suffering or having a desire or for intellectual. It's good to study about him, and if you need something, go ask him, or if you're suffering, but I should not only remember him at that time, and I should not make that object superior to God, not make God the instrument in that object being superior. That's very, very important. Whatever I deserve, I will get. See, one should understand that whatever I deserve, nobody can take it from me, no power on earth. So if I deserve it, I will get it. I don't need to go begging to God. I just put my best effort and say, Lord, if it is meant in my karma, if I deserve it, I'll get it. If not, I'm fine. With that attitude, one should work. And if there's some illness comes, yeah, I go to the doctor and take care of it. And whatever its time is, it will take. But praying is always good. There's nothing wrong with going to church and, you know, if I'm suffering or if my child is sick, it's good. To pray to God is always good. But one should not only pray when I need something. That's the idea. One should constantly be remembering him throughout the day, you know, 24 hours, 365 days, all 7 days of the week, not only on Sundays, you know, like that. As often as you can. And remember with love, not with a selfish motive. Remember God with love. That's very important. Have to love him. You don't have to fear him. You don't have to, you know, be intimidated, because he's in your heart as love. Right. But it's a desire for him, not desire through him to get something. And that desire is good. You have to have desire, like you said, to even to go towards on the path of spirituality. Like we all had the desire to, you know, study this book. That's why we are all here, including me. I also wanted to study this text. That's why I took this in this class, because I felt that I myself needed to develop more devotion rather than knowledge. And so this beautiful text. So we all have this desire, and that is good. That is a pure desire, you know, and that is wonderful, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, but ultimately even that desire disappears when then he becomes one. But that's a good point. Thanks.